Coming to you from Denver, Colorado, the Mile High City. You are listening to My Gay Dad, the podcast, providing you with advice, encouragement, commentary on trending topics, and helpful tips on living your best life. Please welcome your hosts, Alan Wilde and the fabulous Richard G.
Hello there, internet land. How are you guys today? I hope you're doing well. Here in the state we're in, we are actually having a snowstorm.
Snowstorm.
It's about 22 degrees outside right now, and it's our second snowstorm of the year. I love the snow. Well, let me qualify that a little bit. I liked the snow a lot more when I was a bit younger. We need the moisture. That's how the old folks say. We need the moisture. So I'm happy to welcome the change of seasons with the snowstorm and the passing day. We are one day closer to my favorite season of the year, springtime. So much energy, so much, you know, vigorousness, vitality, growth, regeneration. I love the springtime. So I'm going to hand it over to Alan.
Welcome back. We're so excited. This is our Halloween session. So it's going to be very exciting and spooky.
That was my best impression of a spooky voice. Before we get into that Halloween stuff, I heard this story about a guy that went to his doctor. He said he kept saying he could see into the future. He's, "Doc, what can I do? I keep seeing into the future." So the doc tells him, "Hey, how long have you suffered from this condition?" The patient looks at the doctor and he says, "Since next Monday." Okay, that's it. No more dumb jokes. All right. Thank you very much to our email friends. Again, I hope our advice to Stephanie, Charles, Anthony last week, I hope it went over okay. I hope it helped you a bit. Let us know if it helped. If it didn't, let us know that too. Hello, everybody out there in internet land again, worldwide. Hello, hello, hello.
So what we're going to do today, we're just going to have a loose discussion.
Don't use the word loose with him in the room.
Yeah, right.
Hi, everybody. We're back.
Hollywood gossip.
So I was reading about Britney Spears. Did you know she is obligated under a conservatorship, I believe is what it's called?
Her father takes care of her finances.
Her father takes care of her entire existence. He controls everything from who she hangs around with, who she's dating. She, under this conservatorship, she may not have children. She may not have... She just can't get pregnant, period. And they have to approve of who she dates.
There's some sort of mental instability there, some sort of medical reason. She has to sign over if she's mentally competent, I believe, to sign over the conservatorship. She has to be proven mentally unsound. I don't know, but enough of that movie star stuff. Let's talk about something that is a little closer to home. With everything that's happening in this world right now, and I don't want to round the corner to politics, but a bump, no pun intended. We're not rounding the corner for anything. Anyway, but with the politically charged atmosphere that is out there today, I wanted to bring up the subject about having a conversation. A simple conversation, face-to-face talk with another human being, relating ideas back and forth, a debate, civil discourse, however you want to describe it, a conversation, you know, relating to another person on a level that's deeper than a text or just a hi, how are you, what kind of bread do you like, something a little deeper. And what befuddles me, you know, what I get so contrite about is that people are so set. And I say people in general, I'm not pointing the finger. I'm just saying people are so tunnel visioned, so much blinders on that they can't see the other side of the story. Okay, my side of the story. I had a conversation this weekend with a very, very dear friend, a longtime friend, 25 plus years. And the conversation did not end so well. And we're kind of angry at each other right now. There had to be apologies. And, you know, I love yous and apologies because of this conversation. And my stance, we are political opponents, if you will. We're not allies. We both voted for opposite candidates. And I was trying to understand that point of view, that other side. And of course, I have my opinions, my observations, my knowledge, certainly set in stone, and it's my way or the highway. But I was actually trying to understand the other person's point of view. And the topics and the subjects and the pinpoint ideas that this other person was relating to me that this candidate stood for, I was able to rebut them. I was able to provide, you know, refute that claim that the candidate was making. And partly because I like to be informed, partly because I read both sides. I examine this. I look at this theory. Did he do this? Did he do that? Whoops, not he, but you know who I'm talking about. Did this actually happen? What are the numbers? You know, someone who gets up there and touts their prowess by saying, I did this, I did this. I like to go into it, research it, get the numbers from a few different sources, good sources, bad sources, pro sources, con sources. And I just, it amazes me. It just amazes me how the general public, especially now in these, you know, politically charged times, are so incredibly uninformed and one view minded. Not especially small-minded, but one view. It's their view. It's their deal. They're right. Everybody else is wrong. This is America. And my point is, this is America. We have the right to have our own opinions. We don't live in a country that, you know, censors the internet, censors the propaganda, puts out the pro-government propaganda for wherever you live. We live in America. We can have our own ideals. That doesn't mean you can go out and be lawless. It doesn't mean that you can go out and break a window, burn a store, spit on somebody, call somebody a name. But go out there and stand up for what you believe in. This is America. We can do that. Not to turn it into a personal issue, but, you know, the gay thing. We lived our lives well. I said this in a couple episodes ago. Public decency leads to public acceptance. And I truly, truly believe that. We have always erred on the side of caution. Been, you know, like one my favorite president of all time. When they go low, we go high. I've always prided myself and taught our kids better, stronger, faster. Don't give people a reason to not like you. They're going to find plenty of reasons. You know, set the example. Be a leader. I don't want to be on my soapbox, but when you're speaking to someone, try and put all of your prejudices, your preconceived notions into a box. And actually listen to the other person. Now, I have to admit, while I was listening to this other person, in my head was, you know, that is so stupid. That is the most ignorant. That guy, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was all going through my head. But I was trying to listen. And then when it was my turn to express a view, I was shut down. And that, to me, from especially this person that I was speaking to, was offensive. I was offended and I was hurt because it went from a conversation with two people who have known each other for 25 plus years to adversaries fighting, and nobody was going to give, and there was no understanding. There was no give and take. There was no compassion. It just turned into, I'm right, you're wrong, that's it. And I've talked for a while now, but I appreciate the opportunity to get that out. So maybe my point of view can open somebody else's eyes. Sit back and listen. Just sit back and listen. Sit back and listen. So along with all that heaviness, here comes another really bad dad joke. Prepare yourself. What do you call mac and cheese that gets way too close up in your face? Like attitude up in your face. Any guesses? Too close for comfort, mac and cheese.
And now, story time. Brought to you by My Gay Dad, the podcast.
My parents moved to an old neighborhood in 1980. My family purchased a vacant corner lot to build our house on. It was a very memorable time in my life. I was a part of something bigger. I helped build our family home. My father worked hard to acquire the land across the street from us. The land was vacant as well. It was on 4 acres, and in the city, it was a rare find. The vacant land was once part of a farm. The farm contained the 2 vacant houses across the street. At one point, all of the property, including our land, was part of the farm. My father gave up on the property purchase. When asked why the people refused to sell, all my dad would tell us is that the family that owned the land wanted to keep it in the family. We had a feeling my father knew more than he was telling us. In 1982, my older sister continued to harp my parents. She wanted to go to the property on the corner across from ours. They continuously heard stories about the abandoned house being haunted. There were claims that people would walk by and hear screams. There would be doors slamming and no movement seen in the house. In the middle of the night, there would be animals screaming and making noises. My parents finally gave in. My dad said, "If you insist on looking at the home, I will take you myself." Thinking about our safety, my father asked our neighbor to venture into the house with us in case there was an emergency. Our neighbor, Paul, lived alone. His son had grown up and moved away long ago. He told my dad that it wasn't a good idea. The house was old and should be condemned. There was jagged wood, broken glass, and nails sticking out everywhere. We needed to just stay away. He agreed to go in, and he went as far as putting on his old work clothes. He told my dad that he just knew we would fall through the floor or something. I grew up in a world that feels like it was a completely different universe compared to today. Parents allowed their children to play and only return when the street lights came on. They allowed us to go where we wanted, as long as they knew where we were headed. My parents were hands-off when it came to our free time. I was a very creative child. I found ways to entertain myself. As someone who is described as a wallflower, a loner, I had to find ways to entertain myself. Little do my parents know, but I had already been in the house several times. With a sense of wonder and curiosity, I went with my father and sisters to the abandoned house. We entered the house through an enormous broken window next to the front door. Under our feet, the sound of glass crunching and grinding into the dirt and wood made my skin crawl. We explored the house on a hot day in August. But the second we entered the house, I was freezing cold. My body was sweating like everyone else, but I was trembling from being cold. The house was bizarre because the former residents left in a hurry. They took some of the furniture and left other pieces behind. They even left dirty dishes in the sink and food in the pantry. The canned food had all but exploded, and rodents had their way with the contents. The putrid, overwhelming stench of rotting animals filled my senses. I was nauseated. We explored the kitchen first. Then we moved back to the living room. The living room was full of rotting furniture. The smell of stale, rotting fabrics. There were pictures hanging off the wall. The floor was covered in dirt and dust. And every time we moved, it would kick up a storm. And every time we moved, we would step on a bug or a fly. Everything was destroyed. My father made sure we stayed together the entire time, and he was right there with us in every room. In the living room, Paul opened a drawer. It was a built-in cabinet, and the doors of the cupboard were hanging off the hinges. Vandals had their way with the contents. The drawer remained untouched until Paul opened the drawer. Looking over Paul's shoulder, my father asked what he found. His response was simple. Pictures. A lot of pictures. I glanced at the images, and I wanted to take my time and study each image. As a child, that was a wallflower. I mastered the art of observance. This was in my ballpark. Looking and studying at pictures, something I enjoyed. As I reached in to grab a handful, my dad grabbed my hand and pulled it away. He said, "I promised your mom that I would not allow you to touch anything or bring anything back." Feeling deflated, I moved to the next room. We didn't know what the purpose of the room was because it was so basic and undefined. My father remarked that it would have been an office or a parlor. The house's layout was beyond anything that made any sense to my father, who was a carpenter, or a 12-year-old boy with an adventurous streak. And there was movement of spiders, flies, and rodents. The light barely reached this room. My oldest sister opened the closet door in the hall and screamed. And after her scream, there was a second. My dad jumped and was right next to her within two strides. Two steps. The closet contained a dead cat. The cat had been decayed and consumed by nature. The shelves inside contained towels and linens that had been destroyed by rodents and age. The closet had a built-in cabinet with drawers. I reached in to open the drawer and explore. Once again, my dad grabbed my arm. He delivered my final warning. If I reached for or tried to touch anything else, he would take me home immediately. I may have been sensitive at 12 years old. I felt that my father was overly angry with me. Moving past the closet, my sister told my dad that she wasn't sure she wanted to do this anymore. My father was stubborn. He told her, "You're the one who wanted to look in the house. And so you look at everything in the house." We stepped into the bathroom that contained a broken toilet and a clawfoot tub. The smell in the bathroom was equally vile. It was stale. The air had not moved. The mirror that hung on the wall was broken and shattered into pieces, and yet it still hung on the wall. The floor was covered in white tile. I could tell at one point it was beautiful. All that I could sense was an overwhelming evil residing. Inside the tub was coated with a brownish red substance. My sister told my dad that it was blood. My other sister looked at it and told her that she was stupid. Growing impatient with one kid that wanted to touch everything and two daughters that began fighting, my dad yelled, "Enough! Knock it off!" He said it was just paint. "See?" He reached down and swiped it with two fingers. Bringing the fingers up to his nose, he smelled and cussed under his breath. "Jesus Christ. Let's get out of here." As we left, he stopped by the closet and wiped his fingers on the decayed linens in the closet. It was only when we reached the living room that we realized Paul did not accompany us in our little adventure. Standing in the living room full of rotting furniture, still holding a handful of pictures, was Paul. The pictures were in his hand, but they were not his focus. He stared straight ahead without saying a word. My dad asked Paul, "Are you ready to get out here? I think the kids have seen enough to keep them away." Paul did not respond. He just stood there. It was almost like he was in a trance or deep in thought. My father told us to go home. As we made our way out of the house, we heard him ask, "Paul, hey, are you okay?" Immediately following, we heard a crash as my father was pushed to the cupboard and fell to the ground. In a voice that was filled with so much rage and anger, Paul said, "Don't ever touch me." Paul rushed out of the house. Before my dad could get up, he was heading right into our direction, and there was nothing my father could do to protect us. My mom had grown anxious. She walked over to the house just in time to pick us up after Paul pushed all three of us down like a poorly set up bowling pin. We tumbled quick, and my sister, being the overly vocal drama queen, screamed. The scream pulled Paul out of whatever trance he was under, enough to look at us like he was seeing us for the first time. His face was filled with rage and also confusion. My mom stepped in front of us and she told Paul, "Just go home and leave my kids alone." As the years passed, my father continued to reach out to Paul to acquire some explanation as to what happened back in the house. Every effort was ignored by Paul. His home quickly fell into disarray. His yard that was once immaculate quickly became overgrown and filled with weeds. My friends lived down the block, and as I walked to their home, I would occasionally see Paul. He would be aimlessly walking around his yard. I waved at him, but I knew better than to approach him. During the summer, my dad left vegetables grown in our garden on his front porch. After a few days of the box remaining untouched, my dad retrieved it.
The vegetables
on his porch. We're all rotten and covered in mold. My mother, always being stubborn, as she knew when somebody needed help, even before they knew. The holiday season of 1984. My mother made a tray of cookies. She wrapped them up and placed a bow on top. Standing on Paul's porch, my mother rang the doorbell. When she realized that he was not going to open the door, she began screaming at him. "Paul, I'm not going away. You answer this door or I will knock it in. If that doesn't get your attention, I will call the police. I'm sure your son will want to know what's going on with you." My dad heard the shouting and ran out of the garage, thinking my mom was hurt or in trouble. Once he saw that she was yelling to get Paul's attention, he asked her, "Have you lost your damn mind, woman? The neighbors are coming out of their houses." My mom ignored him and began pounding on the door until Paul answered. The door opened, and my sister, that originally went with my mom, had retreated, and she was replaced by my dad. Standing with the neighbors on the sidewalk, I could see that Paul had let himself go. He looked like he lost pounds. His hair was overgrown. My mom looked over her shoulder and decided to save Paul from further embarrassment. She grabbed my father's hand and she pushed past Paul, carrying the tray of candy and goodies. My parents were in his house for hours. The neighbors went home because they had lost interest and it was cold. When my parents finally came home, they didn't say much to each other. That night, though, they fought. My dad yelled, "You could have been killed. You promised me you wouldn't do any more of that weird witchy shit. You put your daughter in danger, and now she's afraid." My mom yelled back, "This is who I am. And I made no such promises. I didn't rub it in your face. It was a life or death situation. I knew I had to intervene. I am not going to sit by and let someone die when I can prevent it from happening." They went to bed angry and had avoided each other for a few days following that fight. Everything became normal, and both of my parents made sure to visit Paul every other day. We all knew it was serious, but my parents insisted that we mind our own business. It wasn't until October 30th of 1986. It was a cold October. My sisters and I decided that we would go trick-or-treating, because it was a Friday, and with proper costume, their friends would not know it was them, sparing them of the embarrassment of being caught trick-or-treating with their little brother. And they would still get their candy. Back in the 80s, we would leave with a pillowcase and come back with a massive loot of sugar, treats. We came home from school. My sisters and I finished our chores and my mom began cooking dinner. It was not quite dark yet. Finishing our dinner, we then got ready to go. Decked out in our costumes, I was dressed as a hobo. I wore my father's overalls, and coffee grounds were pasted to my face with Elmer's glue. We looked out the window and discovered it was snowing. While eating dinner, a few inches of snow had accumulated. Deciding that the temptation of free candy was overwhelming the desire to stay warm, we opened the door to head out. My sister called for my parents to come to the front door. Looking out, there was a single set of footprints walking up to the door. They did not go back the way they came. My dad freaked out. He began searching the house. He went room by room with a baseball bat. He was certain that whoever came in would not have left. Both he and my mom came in through the garage door, and that door was so loud the neighbors could hear when they came home. When my dad was satisfied that no one was in our house, we were allowed to go trick-or-treating. We trekked out in the snow in search of our loot. We crossed the street with full intentions to skip Paul's house. However, with one glance, we knew something was very wrong. My sisters called my parents to come over. After a few minutes, our parents were decked out in their winter gear. They were expecting to break up a fight or look at a costume my sister thought was cool. Instead, they found Paul's front door open. The tracks led from his open front door to our front door. My mom insisted that she was going in his house. My father refused to allow her to move any closer. He told her, "Go in and call the police now." He knew it was not a good sign. The police arrived, and shortly after, the coroner to remove Paul's body. The cause of death was suicide, but there were no marks anywhere on his body. Toxins in his system, and it was easier to dismiss instead of investigate. Everyone knew Paul had become withdrawn, and the rumor was that he was depressed. The following year, my father passed away, and only when my mom had too much to drink did she spill the beans. She told us that she was gifted and could see things that other people couldn't. She would tell us, "Your dad said that I was a witch. I don't know about that, but I know when you kids are in trouble and need help. I know when something is going to happen. I knew about Paul. He tried to kill himself several times. He was always stopped. We always stopped him. He promised us that when he felt like he needed help, he would come and get us. That Halloween, he was already dead. Then he came to us. It was Paul who was at our front door that Halloween. It wasn't until I began writing this story that I decided to look into the property across the street. The vacant land was part of a farm. The two houses across the street that were vacant as well as the surrounding land was owned by a veterinarian. The rumor was that the family disappeared one night. The property was passed down through generations and now owned by his family, and they refused to sell. It was once more passed down and given to two sisters in the family. They sold off the two houses, but to this day they still refuse to sell the 4 acres of land. In the late 90s, there was a group of kids digging around the land. They were doing a science project collecting soil samples and weed growth in the area. The very first shovel they dug up contained bones. The authorities were called, and it was ruled that the property was burial grounds for the animals that died under the care of the veterinarian. When looking further into Paul, I discovered that he inherited his land and he was part of the family. The pictures he held that day were of his great-grandfather. The people who purchased the abandoned homes donated boxes and boxes of pictures and artifacts to the town's history museum. The artifacts were not on display because in several of the pictures were human bodies. It was discovered the doctor treated people as well as animals, and when their bodies were not claimed, they too were buried in unmarked graves. There were no records that verified Paul's great-grandfather even had the credentials to be a veterinarian. It is believed that he was responsible for killing people in the pictures. My mom believes that Paul became possessed in the house. My sisters believe that he couldn't live with himself, knowing that his family was responsible for the horrible things that happened in the house. It was only until I was an adult that I discovered I inherited my mother's abilities. That wasn't all that I inherited. That sweltering hot day when everyone was sweating and I was cold. Something in that house became part of me. And I have never warmed up. I remain cold to this day.
Thank you for listening to My Gay Dad, the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss out on any new episodes. Follow My Gay Dad the podcast on socials and visit mygaydad.cc to keep updated with fresh content. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to leave a review. Until next time.